Section 3 of Poor Folk. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Tony Addison. Poor Folk by Fyodor Dostoevsky. Translated by Charles James Hogarth. April 8th. My dearest Barbara Alexeyevna, to think that a day like this should have fallen to my miserable lot. Surely you are making fun of an old man. However, it was my own fault entirely. One ought not to grow old holding a lock of Cupid's hair in one's hand. Naturally one is misunderstood. Yet man is sometimes a very strange being. By all the saints, he will talk of doing things, yet leave them undone, and remain looking the kind of fool from whom may the Lord preserve us. Nay, I am not angry, my beloved. I am only vexed to think that I should have written to you in such stupid, flowery phraseology. Today I went hopping and skipping to the office, for my heart was under your influence, and my soul was keeping holiday, as it were. Yes, everything seemed to be going well with me. Then I betook myself to my work. But with what result? I gazed around at the old familiar objects, at the old familiar grey and gloomy objects. They looked just the same as before. Yet were those the same inkstains, the same tables and chairs that I had hitherto known? Yes, they were the same, exactly the same. So why should I have gone off riding on Pegasus' back? Whence had that mood arisen? It had arisen from the fact that a certain sun had beamed upon me and turned the sky to blue. But why so? Why is it sometimes that sweet odours seem to be blowing through a courtyard, while nothing of the sort can be? They must be born of my foolish fancy, for a man may stray so far into sentiment as to forget his immediate surroundings, and to give way to the superfluity of fond ardour with which his heart is charged. On the other hand, as I walked home from the office at nightfall, my feet seemed to lag, and my head to be aching. Also, a cold wind seemed to be blowing down my back. Enraptured with the spring, I had gone out, clad only in a thin overcoat. Yet you have misunderstood my sentiments, dearest. They are altogether different to what you suppose. It is a purely paternal feeling that I have for you. I stand towards you in the position of a relative who is bound to watch over your lonely orphanhood. This I say in all sincerity, and with a single purpose, as any kinsman might do. For after all, I am a distant kinsman of yours, the seventh drop of water in the pudding, as the proverb has it. Yet still a kinsman, and at the present time your nearest relative and protector, seeing that where you had the right to look for help and protection, you found only treachery and insult. As for poetry, I may say that I consider it unbecoming for a man of my years to devote his faculties to the making of verses. Poetry is rubbish. Even boys at school ought to be whipped for writing it. Why do you write thus about comfort and peace and the rest? I am not a fastidious man, nor one who requires much. Never in my life have I been so comfortable as now. Why, then, should I complain in my old age? I have enough to eat. I am well dressed and booted. Also, I have my diversions. You see, I am not of noble blood. My father himself was not a gentleman. He and his family had to live even more plainly than I do, nor am I a milksop. Nevertheless, to speak frankly, I do not like my present abode so much as I used to like my old one. Somehow the latter seemed more cozy, dearest. Of course, this room is a good one enough. In fact, in some respects, it is the more cheerful and interesting of the two. I have nothing to say against it, no. Yet I miss the room that used to be so familiar to me. Old lodgers, like myself, soon grow as attached to our chattels as to a kinsman. My old room was such a snug little place. True, its walls resembled those of any other room. I am not speaking of that. The point is that the recollection of them seems to haunt my mind with sadness. Curious that recollections should be so mournful. Even what in that room used to vex me and inconvenience me now looms in a purified light, and figures in my imagination as a thing to be desired. We used to live there so quietly, I and an old landlady who is now dead. How my heart aches to remember her, for she was a good woman, and never overcharged for her rooms. Her whole time was spent in making patchwork quilts with knitting needles that were an arshin, an ell, long. Oftentimes we shared the same candle and board. Also she had a granddaughter, Masha, a girl who was then a mere baby, but must now be a girl of 13. This little piece of mischief, how she used to make us laugh the day long. We lived together, a happy family of 3. Often, of a long winter's evening, we would first have tea at the big round table, and then betake ourselves to our work, the while that, to amuse the child, and to keep her out of mischief, the old lady would set herself to tell stories. Oh, what stories they were! Those stories less suitable for a child than for a grown-up educated person. My word! Why, I myself have sat listening to them as I smoked my pipe, until I have forgotten about work altogether. And then, as the story grew grimmer, the little child, a little bag of mischief, would grow thoughtful in proportion, and clasp her rosy cheeks in her tiny hands, and hiding her face, press closer to the old landlady. Ah, how I loved to see her at those moments! As one gazed at her, one would fail to notice how the candle was flickering, or how the storm was swishing the snow about the courtyard. Yes, that was a goodly life, my Barbara, and we lived it for nearly 20 years. How my tongue does carry me away! Maybe the subject does not interest you, and I myself find it a not over-easy subject to recall, especially at the present time. Darkness is falling, and Teresa is busying herself with something or another. My head and my back are aching, and even my thoughts seem to be in pain, so strangely do they occur. Yes, my heart is sad today, Barbara. What is it you have written to me? Why do you not come in person to see me? Oh, dear one, what would people say? I should have but to cross the courtyard for people to begin noticing us and asking themselves questions. Gossip and scandal would arise, and there would be read into the affair quite another meaning than the real one. No, little angel, it were better that I should see you tomorrow at Vespers. That will be the better plan, and less hurtful to us both. Nor must you chide me, beloved, because I have written you a letter like this. Reading it through, I see it to be all odds and ends, for I am an old man now, dear Barbara, and an uneducated one. Little learning had I in my youth, and things refused to fix themselves in my brain when I tried to learn them anew. No, I am not skilled in letter-writing, Barbara, and without being told so, or anyone laughing at me for it, I know that, whenever I tried to describe anything with more than ordinary distinctness, I fall into the mistake of talking sheer rubbish. I saw you at your window today. Yes, I saw you as you were drawing down the blind. Goodbye, goodbye, little Barbara, and may God keep you. Goodbye, my own Barbara Alexeyevna. Your sincere friend, Makar Dievushkin. P.S. Do not think that I could write to you in a satirical vein, for I am too old to show my teeth to no purpose, and people would laugh at me, and quote a Russian proverb, "Who diggeth a pit for another one, the same shall fall into it himself." End of section 3.